Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. On this episode, I get to go to Boise, Idaho. Not in real life, although I'd really like to, because I always hear wonderful things about Boise. But I did it virtually so I could talk to Megan Riggs, who is a bartender at the Modern Bar in Boise, which is a hotel bar, but it's a really cool little boutique hotel with a very interesting history that she's going to tell us all about. Now, Megan, after an attempt to crack the music industry in LA, she went back home to Boise to a much more entertaining and educational gig as a shot girl at a dive bar. Now she's crafting beautiful cocktails at the Modern Bar, so let's listen to what she has to say about it and her deep, deep love for emo.
Oh, hi. My name's Megan Riggs. I work at the Modern Bar and Restaurant in Boise, Idaho. It is a fun, funky little place. It's third generation female proprietor, Basque owned, which is super awesome. It started in Nampa, Idaho, as essentially a inn for sheep herders. It was boasting hot water. That was the modern element. And people would stay long term. And because it was Basque family, they could sort of speak that language right home to their families. We obviously have a lot of agriculture here, and it's the biggest, I believe it's the biggest Basque population in the nation.
Really?
Yeah, which is
in Idaho.
And I think it's just all the farming, honestly. But yeah, so it's a really cool spot that now is, now it's downtown. The funky element is it was an old travel lodge. Mm-hmm. It got gutted, remodeled. So where I bartend is like the innkeeper's apartment. The kitchen is an old hotel room. The patio is the pool. And, you know, people come in, oh, who manages your boutique hotel? And I'm just like, no, it's very much family owned. I'm one of two full-time bartenders, one of three total. And I would never, honestly, never work at a hotel bar. That's not my scene. But this is such a, we always say the bar and restaurant is an amenity to our guests, but it is very much its own animal. It's very much like we have tons of regulars, tons of locals. We're known as one of the top, if not the top, cocktail bar in Boise, one of the top restaurants. And it's just really a blast to work there. We love our community. We love, you know, a lot of our other local bartenders are our bar owners, are our regulars, and we support their bars. And it's been awesome. It's been, I this year got to be in the Treefort Music Festival bartender showcase for the first time. I also competed in a Fernet cocktail competition. I've never competed before. So after 7 years of bartending, it's definitely the first place where I've actually been like kind of making a stamp for myself in town of like, hey, I'm good at this.
Yay. That's so cool. When did you start bartending and why did you start bartending?
Oh Lord. So you know what? It all circles back to Los Angeles where I got my first gray hairs. I was
Los
living.
Angeles can give you gray hair for sure.
Oh, I swear to God, I started getting them at 23 and I know it's because of LA, but, I don't know if I should tell you the short or the long story. I guess it's a podcast. I can tell you the medium story.
Whichever story you want to tell. And swearing is more than welcome on this.
Oh,
so
that, fuck yeah. Damn it.
To get it all. Do it all. So,
So I went to school for, I wanted to go to school for music industry. Mm-hmm. And at 18 years old, I got flustered and overwhelmed. And I sort of was like, okay, well, here's a really good school I got into. And my dad went here too. And I'll go to the school. And I went to Santa Clara. And I had a great time. I don't think it was the right school for me. But I made a lot of friends. I had a great time. But what I ended up doing was studying marketing and then having a minor in music, which is totally different than music business.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I did, I moved to LA after graduation and I lived in like six different places in like 6 months. It was, I'm hopping around. I landed in Long Beach and I got a job at Ricochet Artist Management, where I was doing marketing for metal bands. And that was pretty fun. It was a little like lacking direction, but it was a really cool experience, really fun crew to work with, really fun to be able to work on copy and get that trust of like, hey, sorry, bummer to anyone who doesn't know this, but a lot of times when you message your favorite artist or band, it's somebody like me in a spinning computer chair, spinning around, being like drinking coffee, like, thank you so much for listening to our music. It means so much to us. And it's just like me. So I did that for a while. And I had that company sort of dissolved into as just sort of owner and assistant. Mm-hmm. And so I had a job on the line from a company that had been bought by Sony. And I was really excited for that. And then Los Angeles, here's where it all starts, is very much a place that's like, the job's on hold. Give us another month. Give us another few weeks. Let me get back to you about this. And, or you meet, the president or the vice president of your favorite labels while you're out at shows and they say, oh, I need someone like you. Let me get your email. You never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. And it's very common. And so, while waiting on this job to start, I was going through Long Beach and I applied to a job a restaurant as a hostess. And they said, well, you need 2 years fine dining restaurant experience to even be a hostess. And I was like, wow. I've worked at Jimmy John's and in the music industry and in marketing. So yeah. I kind of tried to tough it out for a while. And then I decided, you know what? I need to go home. And unfortunately was following a love that failed as well back home. So I was like, I had motivation to go home. And I thought, let me go home for 6 months. I will barista, I will bartend, I'll do all these things. And I will go back to Los Angeles and I'll never have to worry about being between jobs again. Mm. And now it's been like 7 years and I'm still here.
So I guess that means that when you got back to Boise, you found a bartending gig pretty quickly.
I did.
So did you fake it till you made it? Or was it one of these, like, all you had to do was make gin and tonics and people were fine?
So, oh my God. So I worked at this bar and it's an institution in Boise. And I'm not going to throw shade, but it is a dive bar and a bit of an alcoholics bar. And it's, it is what it is. It's divey. It's called Mulligan's. We love it. It's an institution.
Most institutions are kind of divey and questionable, and that's why we love them, right?
But it's touch tunes, so.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was getting paid actually above the normal server bartender wage in Idaho. It's like $3 and change. So I was getting $5 an hour and, you know, some tips. And what I would do, I was the shot girl. And it's not a shot girl. Like, it's not like I'm going to look really cute and go to the club for booze and be, you know, it's like I am walking around with a tray of shots going $3 shots, $3 shots. And people go, ooh, $3 shots. And I'm like, God, fuck yourself. And then, you know.
Oh, never heard that before.
Yeah. It was just, and then I'd say, oh, what's, you know, what is in this Washington apple? Oh, it's Crown Apple Crayon. Oh, it's Crown. Yes. Yeah, it's Crown. I found out, I'm a very honest person. I found out it was Potter's Crown. I thought it was Crown Royal. I still feel guilty 7 years later. Oh my God.
And you know that anyone doing those shots did not care.
Oh my God. I know. Oh my God. But it was awful. People would joke about,
you're so kind.
People would like joke about pushing my tray over or like, you know, it was awful. But I had, it actually taught me really important skills because I am so good with regulars now. I remember people's drink orders, their names, their stories, their dog's name. I mean, I always remember dog's name, but it's actually really helped me going forward. But I worked there doing that for, I want to say like 9 months. And they told me that I was like the longest person who'd ever lasted doing it. And they're like, my boss would joke, she go, I'll never fire you. I'm like, well, you have to. So that was hilarious. My first job. And it was, you know, it was what it was.
Yeah.
I will say this though. I got a little sneaky, I think I had some people kind of resent me for this because most people then, you know, they bust, they serve, they work their way up, they bar back.
Yeah.
I actually had this kind of rowdy club with like a stripper pole and three bars and DJs, and they offered to teach me how to bartend. And so I said, you know, hell yeah. So I technically was a cocktail with a few bartending shifts, but every time I cocktailed, I had my own well, my own till. I made every drink. I'd bring it. They say, oh, make sure the bartender gets a tip. I'm like, bitch, I'm doing it all. So I went from there. And then after that, I got a couple corporate places, you know, like Matador, Eureka, those kind of spots. And I started opening a lot of places. I've been on, I think, 3 or 4 opening crews, and I just kept moving up. And with the Modern, I'm super lucky because I actually moved into craft beer. I got my Cicerone certification.
Oh my God. Congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you. I only am my level one. I want the level two. In Idaho, it's super weird. It's so few people do it that they only do it I think once or twice a year. It's a lot of money, like 380, I think. And you have to time it out and take it in a big group. Mm-hmm. And with level one, it's 60. And if you fail, you can take it again. With level two, it's like, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did craft beer for 3 years. I worked in breweries and bottle shops. And then the Modern reopened after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a really shitty way to the old crew, like everybody had to move on because it'd been closed 11 months. Yeah. And on the bright side, I think most everyone moved on to jobs that they really, really, I think it pushed them in a direction that they really wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it is unfortunate. But on my benefit, people stay for a long time at that job. They really take care of us. And so it was a really unique opportunity to be able to apply for that bartending position.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to take it part-time. I had two other offers. And then I talked and I got to, you know, talking with my now manager, who's now a great friend. And I was like, I just have a good feeling about her. And yeah, it's been awesome.
That's amazing. So you've been there pretty much since it reopened then.
I just hit 2 years at the end of this last month. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so I'm sure you've had the opportunity to kind of create your own cocktails while you've been there. It sounds like you were getting to do that a little bit leading up to.
Yeah. You know, yes and no. I actually before Modern had only had one cocktail menued, and it was a really shitty experience. I got capsaicin burns.
Oh,
I,
no.
I made a, and it was my fault, but I made a habanero simple syrup and like a mango puree and all these things. And I was making this really, really good margarita. I was working at a new Mexican restaurant in town, and I created this margarita, and the head bartender there and I kind of butted heads, and he even was like, no, that's money, we got to put that on. really soon after, I was just not in the group chat anymore, and people weren't talking to me anymore, and I suddenly they just stopped talking to me. I was like, do I not have a job? You know, it was so bizarre. And I was hearing that drink's like best selling on the menu, and I'm like, oh,
really? So they couldn't share in that. People were just kind of like, oh, that's a drag.
And I don't know what all happened, and I don't think I ever will. But because I'd never been fired, and I had been praised by my manager 2 weeks prior that I was doing a great job, so it's super weird. But yeah, I made this cocktail, and then I felt like it was just taken from me, and I didn't give it a fun name. I didn't put mine so. Anyways, I kind of didn't do that for a while, and now at the Modern, I do it all the time, and we get to have a ton of fun with it, and I've made so many, like, so many, even that I'm like, oh, remember that weird cocktail I made? And I'm like, I didn't even write it down.
So, well, I have to ask, it always comes up, because you're a music person at heart, you love music, you used to play a little music here and there, so have you had the opportunity to name drinks? Like musically, as it were, like after artists or songs.
Yes,
because I always love hearing those stories.
I have one, and the band knows about it, which is fun. I have. Do you know the band This Wildlife?
No.
They're from Long Beach. They used to be kind of a punk band. Now they're more
really
singer songwriter.
They are then.
You should listen to them. They're so good. They have a song about a dog. I think they're taking a break. I think the singer last show I saw, I think he was having a baby. So, but I would run into him, like I'd see him at emo night in LA, and like they're, you know, out and about. And so they have this song called No More Bad Days that I really like. And so this one day after work, my boss was with some friends and they were at a table drinking, and I got up. They said, oh, do you want to have a drink with us? I said, well, sure. I was still kind of, I was just coming off shift. So I was like, well, I'll make myself something. And I don't know. I was like, what do I want? And so I just decided what I wanted. And it was a Fever Tree grapefruit soda, which is a super good soda, plug for Fever Tree. Grapefruit juice, lime juice, all fresh squeezed, a little St. Germain and Botanist gin, really simple. But it was so bright and just almost tropical and juicy. It's just super bright, and it made me happy. And I was like, this reminds me of just like summers in Long Beach. And we put a little pink flamingo pick into the lime. And it just reminded me of summers in Long Beach. So I named it No More Bad Days. And then they were coming to tour. So I let them know, and they were like, this is the coolest thing. They're so happy. So I'm like, fun.
Thought we hit rock bottom and then the floor gave out. Yeah, it was hard back then, it's even harder now. Cause when you're young and poor, you hope for so much more. I hope for rain to wash us clean and make a brand new start for both our tired hearts. Oh. No more bad days, it's clear from here. No more bad days for you, my dear.
Ask, like, what, because you were saying, okay, I went to LA because I wanted to work in the music industry. So obviously there was something that back in there, you said that, I think you told me ahead of time that you, when you were young, you played piano.
I did. Yes. I was classically trained in piano for, I think like, actively lessons for like 11 years. I started when I was 7.
Did you want to, or was that your family was like, oh, everyone in this family plays piano?
What a fucking fight it was. Oh my God. I wanted to play violin. And ooh. I thought even electric violin one day. Ooh. And I was told I wasn't allowed to because my older sister tried to play violin and she quit. So, of course, we're the same person.
So, of course, you're going to quit? Oh, man.
And I get it. Now that I'm older, like, I know that they're very expensive, and they're expensive to rent. And we are so lucky.
What, like a piano isn't?
Well, so we have inherited my grandmother's Steinway Grand.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a spoiled bitch. And I learned on the Steinway Grand piano. And it's so beautiful. So in like my house
it's
now,
taking up space. Someone has to play it.
Yeah. Well, and it's gorgeous. And it's funny because now I haven't been playing and I have a little Yamaha console. It's right next to me. And a part of me is like, God, I got to start playing again because when, you know, when that piano moves on to its next home, I want it to be my home.
Yeah. So I'm seriously.
Like, I'm really bad. I have right now in my house, I've got two guitars, a banjo, a tambourine, and a piano and a ukulele. And I haven't played music in so long. It's bad. But
so you started playing when you were little. And
I did.
And played for 11 years. And was that what made you decide maybe I'll go into the music industry? Or was it just all
not at all?
Nope.
Not at all.
That was just something your parents made you do.
Yeah, I will say it really helped me in college in my music minor. Having a background in classical piano was like, thank God, you know. And I've just always really loved music. I've definitely, when I was a teenager, was like fangirl, you know, I've always gotten really into it and the music, musicians, their stories. I love going to shows. And I think that, with this, I think I was trying to find a marriage of like what my family expected of me, you know, supporting me through a really nice school and also what I want to do. And so what made sense to me was marketing within the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Which I still do to an extent. I on and off, like since moving back, I've worked remotely and I worked for my friend's record label for a little bit. And I've done a few things here and there. And now I actually do marketing for the bar. But yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, if I could go back in time, I don't think marketing is what I would study. Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to go back to school for, special effects makeup. I don't know if that's still going to happen, but, cause I'm, you know, I'm 30 and it's, I'm young, but I'm also, I'm not young in terms of finding, getting a career going. And, that's something that can be bartending or could not be. I love hospitality. I love bartending. It does get really emotionally exhausting and physically exhausting. Uh-huh. And it's something that, you know, but I also hear a lot of people who feel that and they leave and then they're like, God, I have to come back. Not, you know, right now I'm really happy where I'm at with it. And in my weird long-winded answer to your question, no, it wasn't my piano background. It wasn't at all my musical talent or lack thereof. It was very much a respect for others and wanting to be, you know, behind the scenes in that. And I think a lot of that was, you know, while I was in college, I met my friend, Shane, who I didn't know, but was in a pretty successful band, and he and I became best friends. And I started just, you know, being, you know, in green rooms a lot more and going to a lot more shows and being behind the scenes. And I was like, this is all really cool. And like meeting tour managers and meeting people that are, you know, involved in these big productions. And I was like, this is awesome.
About all these other roles that you can do within music. Cause I have a guitar back there. I haven't touched it in a decade. Yeah. I can't really play, but I love music so much that I wanted to support it somehow. And that's totally what I'm hearing from you too. You're like, how can I be involved in it without having to prove that I'm like a super stellar, you know, player of music?
Yeah.
You know? There's gotta
like,
be something.
Honestly, if I could like buckle down and learn this banjo, like let me be in a bluegrass band. I'd love it. But like, it's sort of like, I don't know, kind of the shitty saying, like those who can't do teach, which not true, but like, but in that vein also like, well, I'm not a great musician, but I can work in music. I don't have to be on stage.
Yep. Totally. Well, it sounds like you still kind of do work in music. Cause you were talking about just your, before we were on the recorded part of this, we were talking about your experience booking bands and, you know, running venues, music venues and things like that. So you still got to do that. And how do you get your musical yayas out today?
Well, so I did venue management for Treefort for a little bit. I did it for a couple of years. And honestly, it was fun, but it was stressful. And the payment is a wristband. I, you know, when you're working three jobs and managing the venue, the wristband doesn't do me any good because I don't have time to go to any shows. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I felt that my resume deserved yeah. paycheck.
Yeah.
And so I stopped doing that. Not never, but like, and this isn't a dig on them at all, because I think that's totally fair.
That's just how it's set up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of those events, I do stuff like that still too. If it's a weekend thing, I'm like, you know, this takes some time away from me, but I love it. And it's not sucking my life up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not taking so much time that I'm dead.
And if I had more time.
Yeah.
But, and then also too, the volunteers are very young a lot of the times. And so it'd be frustrating when they'd be like, hey, you know, number one rule, no drinking, you know, here's all the rules for the volunteers. And they leave, the show starts. Hey, can we get a beer? No, like, no. And I don't know. I'm like, maybe I seem fun. I have tattoos. I'm like, no, I'm kind of a hard ass. I'm a rule follower. You wouldn't think it, but I'm very much a rule follower. And I was like, oh God, these little teens, I don't like teens. I think that's like, I don't know, man.
You had to babysit. But, that's all.
Yeah. So I don't do that anymore, but I did, when I worked at, a really cool brewery in town, it actually just got bought. So I can't speak for it now. I'm sure it's still cool, but when I worked there, it was family owned, and I was a bartender as well as the artist liaison. So I would coordinate the art wall, whether it was photography, tapestry, like painting. Mm-hmm. And I would coordinate with that person if they want to do a first Thursday event, if they want to do any event, if how they want to sell. So we did this one event with this artist in town who is a sweet friend. Her name's Ashley Dreyfus. She is making, I'm very proud of you, Ashley. She's making a really big name for herself all around. So she had in the past wanted to design a PBR can, but she was too young. Mm-hmm. And so she had just turned 21. I did her art display because she's awesome. And I was like, hey, can Ashley make a can with us? And they're like, okay. So we coordinated that. We had her design a beer can. And since then, she actually has done the PBR contest and won this last year or the year before.
Nice.
Yeah. But we had her do a beer can. And because she's like a little Boise celebrity, we're like, let's just do a big event. And so we had, I believe, a jewelry maker pop up. We had her selling merch. And then in the back brewery, we've done crazy shit. We had the Nappy Roots play back there. They brewed a beer with us. Like, so we do fun stuff. And so we had a show back there. And funny enough, this show was, I had three bands booked. One band dropped out. So I reached out to somebody who I knew played music. And I looked into their Spotify and I was like, oh, they're actually really good. I kind of didn't expect that. and so I was like, do you want to play this event? And this person's now my partner of 2.5 years.
Yay!
Which is so funny because he was married and I had a boyfriend and we were not like, you know, and he says, he's like, yeah, I remember that event because my boyfriend was running the sound. And he's like, God, yeah, he was being super rude to you. And I just remember, God, she doesn't deserve that. And he's like saying, oh, and my wife's like, would you think she's cute? And he's like, no, what are you talking about? Not at all. And he's like, oh my God, no, I thought you were the most beautiful person I've ever seen. So whatever, two years later, like we didn't even talk between, you see each other around town. Hey, what's up? You know? Mm-hmm. And then one day we just hung out and then we just kept hanging out. But,
and at that point, everything lined up.
So yeah, it's so funny. So that was the first and only show, and it actually went so well. I can't believe I haven't done it again. But that was the first show I did where I booked every band. I booked a door guy. I booked a sound guy. I made playlists for between sets. I ran the set times, like, and I also, they didn't give me the night off, so I also bartended.
You were bartending too.
Sheesh. Oh my god, it was so fun. It was so fun.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Well, I gotta ask, what kind of bands, like, what was it that made you fall in love with music? I mean, it sounds like there's always music in your house anyway, but you had that moment, you know, when you were a kid and somebody was playing something or you heard something that made you be like, more of this.
Yes, it definitely was like, it's not a phase, mom. It was my emo phase scene. my first loves of bands, I loved, when I was like 15, I loved All Time Low and Mayday Parade. Love. I still do. I got very obsessed with Pierce the Veil. I got, that was my first tattoo at 18, was lyrics. Ironically, they say forget regret, and I do regret the tattoo. but yeah, I just I love these bands, and it was so funny. I remember hearing Day to Remember, If It Means a Lot to You, which is this melodic, like there's like a minimal shout screaming. It's pretty melodic. And I was like, oh, I'm not seen. I'm a hardcore kid. I like hardcore. And I'm like, oh my God. Since then, I actually did get really into bands. Like I love like Architects and Parkway Drive and like Let Live and all these. I like these bands that are legitimately a little heavier, but yeah. I definitely, it was me as a teenager going out to Nampa, Idaho, drinking PBRs with my friends. And we would listen to these kind of like metal-y songs and
loud screamy stuff. Yeah.
And it's so stupid, but like people, I mean, it's not stupid, but people call like hardcore, they call it, it's like a brotherhood sort of, which, okay, patriarchal, whatever. But it is a community, and you go to these shows and you have this like solidarity and camaraderie that's really special. And you go to these house shows and these really unique kind of venues, and everybody's in this pit together, and we're all like, you know, shoving each other. It's just like the energy is so intense, and it became just the way I met all my friends. And it was just this thing that we all had in common. We all were like wearing skinny jeans and getting tattooed and listening to metal, and like it becomes your identity. And and now, you know, now my favorite artist is probably like Shaky Graves, but like I'll play those songs every once in a while. The other day I was listening to Parkway Drive for the first time in like 5 years, and I was like, shit, this is good, you know. And
it never leaves you. Someone told me once that pop music is built on the shoulders of the shoulders or backs, I can't remember, of teenage girls, right? Not to say that emo is pop, but still, it's a huge something about how teenage girls hang on to that music that they loved more than guys do. You know, they'll remember that. But for us, we'll go into the future, and if that band comes around 20 years later, we will still have the same passion and enthusiasm and love that we had when we were 15 years old, you know?
Well, and now you see the resurgence of like emo nights that started in Echo Park and I actually just went to one in Boise, and I said, you know, to my partner, I was like, I don't know if I want to go, because I was there day one, Echo Park. Yep. I was their first anniversary. I was their second anniversary, you know, and I was like, all right, let me go. I had these 6-inch platform boots. I had taken them off. There's these photos of me on the stage, like dancing with my boots in my hands. And like, oh my God, it was so fun. But you see, when we were young fest, because Warped Tour stopped coming, and you see these, hey, I have this 20 year anniversary vinyl coming back out, getting repressed, or I'm going, you know, here's this 10 year anniversary tour. We're going to play this album in full. Mm-hmm. And people are, these shows are selling out because it's what we love. And we, you know, and it's like all time low. I don't give a shit about what they're making now. I don't like that music anymore. But when they do that album, I still love that band. And if they ever played like one of their early EPs, like Put It Up or Shut Up or So Wrong It's Right, I would be, oh my God, I'd be there with bells on. I just like, it's so fun.
Well, something I always have to ask is, like, I try to do the pairing for you. I almost feel like it has to be a menu and a music festival, but try to do like a pairing of like a cocktail, or just what would you be drinking? Cause you're also a craft beer person. And so maybe it's a certain beer, but what would you be drinking and what would you be listening to like in your downtime? You know, you're not working, you get to be home, whether you're home rocking out or you're chilling out, whatever it is, what would that combo be? And I have to, since you're a craft beer person, I have to throw out to you that I'm originally from San Diego, and that Pizza Port is like just where I used to get pizza at the beach when I was a kid.
Yeah. I love San Diego. And
it's like legendary, you know, it's legendary now. And I'm like, I never drank that beer. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Man, that's a tough question. I feel like, okay, if I'm home, I'm looking, I'm like trying to see my vinyl. Oh, you know what? So my vinyls are all over the place. I have, I literally have, like, for some reason I bought this Live in Concert Flight of the Conchords vinyl. It's like just a joke
that's
vinyl.
Because they're fun.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So I have everything from that to like, you know, to Shaky Graves, but I'm seeing this one behind me. I just found from Under Soil and Dirt by The Story So Far. That is a band that when I lived in the Bay Area, I've probably seen them 5 or 6 times, and that's not having seen them in at least 7 years.
Oh, wow. And
so, like, I love that band. Getting this album the other day, a few weeks back, has been so fun. And I go to this thing called Vinyl Night every other week at one of my favorite bars, the Water Bear, here in town. If you're ever in Boise, we love them. Shout out Kylie and Laura, my little tardigrades.
Yeah.
But they host this Vinyl Night, and it's so fun because they give you a free music token. So you get to bring whatever you want, play whatever you want. There's two players. You kind of, you know, mix and match whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you get a free drink. So I keep bringing that. So I feel like I'm listening at home. I'm listening to From Under Soil and Dirt on vinyl. I'm drinking. My favorite beer I've had in a long time. It's not very tastefully named, but it's from Nightmare Brewing. It's called Colombian Necktie. And it is like, God, it was like passion fruit and sour sop. It was beautiful, beautiful sour. I'd never had sour sop in a beer before. It's incredible. But if I'm out, I Naked and Famous all the way, which
yes, that's one of my drinks. Love it.
The lack of yellow chartreuse is really ruining my life right now. It's a personal attack from the monks.
I actually had a drink the other night called the Naked and Infamous, and they swapped out the yellow chartreuse for Galliano.
It
was actually pretty good. I mean, it's not yellow chartreuse, but it still hit those notes. It wasn't quite as rich. And I was, because I saw that and I was like, oh, okay. So this is how someone is addressing that issue.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Galliano at work. We just ran out of our yellow, and it was, unfortunately, it was in one of our core cocktails. And, and we found that we can sub a little less with the green and add more sugar, but it's not the same. And I love green chartreuse. Like when I lived in the Bay, it's really funny to me because in Idaho, and I think in a lot of places, the bartender's handshake is a Fernet. We always drink Fernet. People go, gross, who likes that? And we're like, all of us. We all like it. In the Bay, I didn't bartend, but I was friends with a lot of craft bartenders. Mm-hmm. So they would pass clothes. We'd be hanging out. And our industry shot was green chartreuse just as a shot. So I think I'm a cool guy, right? I'm like, I love green chartreuse. It's great. I used to drink this straight. So I got COVID twice. I'm triple vaxxed and boosted, yet it still gets you. And the second time I got it, I was over it, and I was like, okay, I'm good, I'm back to work. And I tried to take a shot of green chartreuse thinking I'm all better. And oh my God, I thought I was gonna die. I was just oh my God, my throat was like, couldn't handle it.
Too. Oh no.
So I couldn't drink it for a while, and I tried it again. I was like, oh, this is fine.
I would be so sad if I couldn't have green chartreuse.
Me too.
I would be just destroyed if that was taken away from me.
it's so good. And like, I hope it gets figured out soon. I know that there's all these vows of silence, et cetera, et cetera.
But people just have to stop liking it so much. I think we behind the scenes did our jobs too well in sharing it with others, and too many got used to it. So now it's just suffering from its own popularity,
So they're first. Mm-hmm. You heard it here first. Everybody stop being selfish.
Yes.
So we can have chartreuse.
Stop it, because we really want our chartreuse. Well, I think that's probably a great note to wrap it up on. Thank you so much. But tell people your social media if you want them to know about it, to follow along on your next competitive escapades.
Yeah.
Where the social media of the bar, all that kind of stuff. Rattle that off for us.
So mine is Megan Chase, MEGHANCHASE. Next time I compete, I will be, I was overwhelmed by how many men there were in comparison to women and the amount of full aprons and handlebar mustaches. So I'm not kidding. I absolutely will be doing a lace front mustache. I will be in so watch for that. Modern, we have at Modern Bar and at the Modern Hotel. This is so bad because I run this Instagram. I think it's Modern Bar. If it's not, it's the Modern Bar. I should know this.
I feel like it's the Modern Bar. I'll tag it when we post this up to make sure.
Oh man. I just adopted a puppy and my brain is just like mush. And so
totally fair.
Yeah.
And we were talking about chartreuse, the distress of chartreuse.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It was so awesome to talk to you. Don't go away, but I just want to say, it was great to talk to you.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much.
I got your picture. I'm coming with you, dear Marie.
coming. There's a story at the bottom of this bottle and on the pen.
So you want to go to Instagram and follow at The Modern Bar. And that way you can see all the cool events that they have going on there. I mean, there are art shows, there are clothing pop-ups, there's storytelling, and of course there's music. And if you go there, then you get to see Megan, and Megan can make you some amazing cocktails. You can also follow Megan at Megan Chase, M-E-G-H-A-N, Chase, on Instagram if you want to see what she's up to. And I just need to get my Midwest on. There isn't enough time or money for me to fly to all the places I want to go to, but Boise has been on that list. Thank you, Megan, so much for talking with us today, or with me, I should say, us being the general us, and also for introducing me to No More Bad Days. That is a song that I'm going to be listening to a lot for the next month at least. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.